Hi, and welcome to the Indie Music Podcast, the podcast for independent musicians and other music professionals. We're your hosts, myself, Matt Denton, also known as Mojo, of Ragged Birds Music. I'm a recording artist and mix engineer. And Douglas Reynolds of Resonance Studio, a mastering and recording engineer.
How's my level?
Could you come up just a little bit?
How's that?
I can bring you up in my monitor, just a sec.
Yeah, I didn't change anything on my end.
It brings me up too, but I'll try not to talk at the same time as you tonight.
Good luck. How's your level, Doug?
My level's good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Good level?
Good level.
Man, it feels like I haven't talked to you for a week. I missed you, man.
Yeah.
It's been a busy week. I don't know about you. God, it's only Wednesday, isn't it?
It's only Wednesday.
I can't even believe it. Yeah, it's been a week. I'm happy, though. This is the first day this week I've been able to open the windows and get some fresh air.
Yeah, same here. It's been, like, dreadfully hot.
Oh, well, we've had the fire and smoke and brimstone and jackhammer and God.
I saw it looked like it had been pretty devastating to the redwoods.
Yes, yes. I think an entire, like, national park burned or something. It's pretty bad. It's almost like an annual thing this in California now. It's fire season. It's the fifth season. Not fun.
Yeah.
But apart from the devastation, destruction, and smoke, things are going okay.
Every year, it always occurs to me, like, what happened when nobody lived there?
Right. Well, nobody reported on it.
Yeah.
The animals, did their thing, and the forest grew back.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, these fires that are going on right now, they're actually, like, calling them lightning complex fires. They were started by the intense thunderstorms and lightning storms. There was, like, I think 15,000 lightning strikes that started over 300 fires.
Oh, wow.
It was insane. So they're not even calling them the this fire, the that fire. They're the lightning complex fire Santa Cruz and the lightning complex fire. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now, I didn't think you guys really got thunderstorms.
We usually don't. This was kind of a freak thing that wasn't even on our weather forecast. I think I told you about it the other morning. It was like 4 o'clock in the morning, and like we heard this crazy sound that sounded like it was pouring rain, and it was the wind just whipping the trees. And then we started to hear thunder, and then it just started raining, and like all four of us ran outside in our underwear and like put away all my tools and everything else that was sitting on the patio and just put it all in the garage and everything because the rain was not in the forecast. And it rained like half a day, and for 2 days it thundered and lightning. And then in the afternoon it was like 100 degrees. So it was the weirdest weekend, but yeah, that was when all the fire started.
So what was up with the generator?
Well, I bought it because, this is the second year that our power company is threatening rolling blackouts for heat and, fire safety and covering their butt because they got found liable for those giant fires a couple of years ago. But also because, with all the crazy just random power outages, we figured it was time to have a backup solution, especially since I'm working at home. My kids are going to be going to college full-time from home.
Yeah.
We can't really be without power for longer than a couple of hours without, it affecting a whole bunch of things that we never had to think about before. Yeah, weird times, man. Speaking of power, I was just out in the back wiring up our shed that is going to be a new study space / music studio.
I thought you were going to say vocal booth.
Well, it's bigger than a vocal booth. It's like 15 feet by 8 feet. It's a decent size.
Wow.
Yeah. So like all my music stuff's going to go on one side and then the other side is going to be like a little, study nook. It's going to be cool. So I'm out there.
That sounds fantastic. Are you making
wiring it up?
Is it rectangular?
It is. Yeah, I've got bass traps and sonic treatment on the way. I'm going to insulate it. I'm going to drywall it, paint it. That's going to be cool. It's going to be cool.
That is. So you're using rock wool?
I looked at that. It's like for the percentage more sound insulation you get, it's twice the price.
Yeah.
It's almost impossible to find. You can't order it online. It's out of stock around here. Plus, these are technically exterior walls, so they're supposed to be a vapor barrier. So I think I'm just going to go with some nice R13 craft paper covered. God, how many listeners did we lose by now talking about this stuff? but yeah, I'm getting it tomorrow, the insulation. What is going on in your world, Doug?
you know, sorry, right now I'm really focused in business development and marketing.
Oh,
and I've got new mastering clients coming in.
Nice.
Yeah, very. And really excited about that. It's always just getting the opportunity to work with other people's music and participate in that is always like makes everything.
Isn't that the coolest?
It is.
I was just thinking that how lucky we are to just like be the first people to listen to some of this music and just work with like really cool artists. And just, it's just a treat.
It drives me nuts sometimes because I can't talk about it.
I was going to say the same thing. It's like, I really want to share this, but, and that's the worst thing too. Like, you know, mixing and mastering, you're a little closer, but me, I'm like, I have no idea when something's going to come out, you know?
You know, and sometimes I can't even talk about it at all, no matter what, you know, it just depends on the agreement. So, you know, there's a lot of work I do that actually doesn't get released. So I don't exactly know why, how that works out, but sometimes producers decide not to release music.
Huh. I wonder if that's like contractual stuff, maybe sometimes.
Yeah.
Label issues. I mean, I've heard of like major acts that have stuff sitting on the shelf somewhere because they were with a label and somebody owned the publishing and then the label folded or somebody changed jobs and then now nobody can release it. I mean,
I've had to pull stuff down that I've published before because the artist was unsigned at the time that I did the work for them. And then they signed and their agreement with the label said anything they'd done previously that is going to be recorded or used again needs to be taken down.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So I worked with them while they were independent and then the song they were re-recording with the label. And so they called me up and said, hey, I need you to take this down.
Huh. I never heard that.
But that happens too.
Yeah, I guess it does. Weird stuff.
It's like, what?
But tell me a little bit more about your business development. What are you working on?
I'm working on reaching out to artists and studios.
Okay.
All over the place, you know, and for getting more awareness of my mastering studio. Uh-huh. I mean, that's primary purpose is just to get introduced, you know, their leads. And I'm trying to create some relationships and make some conversions, you know, from leads to customers and have those relationships for continued studio work for, you know, these individuals and studios. So that's really my focus.
Are you beginning this, in the middle of this, trying new things, pivoting? How's that?
No, this is something that I have ongoing, but I'm always like, for instance, my Google ads, I will modify those 3 or 4 times a week, you know, I monitor what's going on and I take a look at metrics and who's looking. Like my current ad a few days ago, I noticed I was getting the majority of my clicks were 13 to 17 year olds. I'm like, okay. So
that's not really your target audience.
So. And nothing wrong with 13 to 17 year olds.
Oh, sure.
Than they probably can't afford for music
your
production
services. So.
You know, and with that in mind, I'm it's just trying to continually evolve that marketing to reach who I'm trying to reach and let people find me too. You know, it's not just me reaching out, but to be able to be positioned in an opportunity when someone's looking for me.
Yeah. 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 I feel that. That's, you know, you put yourself out there, you kind of do what you can on social and with ads and stuff and get the word of mouth going. I think almost word of mouth is still as or more important than any of that other stuff right now.
Yeah. I started a new YouTube channel.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
How's that going?
First video, most awkward thing I've ever done.
You didn't even send me a link to this? What?
I put it out on all of my channels. What, you didn't see? You follow
well,
me.
See,
you didn't see it?
that's the thing about social media. You feel like, and everybody, we talked about this. We did marketing in the DIY music chat recently, and everybody's like, oh, I know, I feel like I'm spamming everybody. I feel like I'm just, you know, talking too much about myself. But, you know, with the life of a post and with the amount of posts that there are, people just don't see stuff.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I follow you on all of my channels and I'm not on there, but I didn't see that. And you kind of feel like you put stuff out there and everybody sees it, but that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, ever since you said it's your tweet, you can repost it as much as you want. So
yeah,
I've been doing that. Or retweet.
I saw once some guy was talking about promotion and this sounded obnoxious, but it kind of put it in my head that, oh, that just speaks to the life of a certain type of post, that they're like, when you are promoting a new single or whatever, you post your tweet or whatever, and then delete it and then repost it. And then do this once an hour for like a, you know, like all day, because people pop on and pop off and your tweet kind of disappears from their feed after a while. It just scrolls right past. So
yeah,
if you want to catch the same people, you got to like repost the same stuff over and over. I don't think that works on Instagram, but on Twitter, I could see how that would be a thing.
Yeah. There's really no, I mean, you can share, but you can only share to individuals, you know? So, and then I'm not exactly sure. I think that I don't do it often. Is that end up being a DM, I think.
Right.
Yeah. So you basically,
yeah, I've never done that.
Like spamming people, but
yeah. Yeah. And I see that on Instagram too. Like when you go to post, it'll say, you know, send this to somebody. Like, what does that mean? Does that mean it shows up in their DM box? Because I always have to think about where that is. Like,
yeah,
you have a message. Like, I don't know where to find that. Instagram, they don't make it easy.
Yeah.
It's like a little paper airplane, like an icon thing.
I mean, I've got a post that's been out for 4 days now that's got 2,500 views.
Wow.
Yeah. And I'm real happy about it. It's like the first post that's done really well for me on Instagram. It is promoted. With that said, I've never had promoted posts that went over 100 views. I don't know.
Huh.
But this one got some legs and took off for some reason. It was different than anything I had done before. This one was video. It's a 1 minute video in the timeline.
Okay.
And then I had some music from one of the artists that I work with in the background of that video, which is really cool.
That's cool.
Thanks to them for letting me use that, you know, also promoting them in the process as well.
Right. It's kind of like a co-promotional process.
And, Did you get permission
from them? Like you said, hey, I'd like to use your music in my promotion. That'll help us both.
Yeah.
Can we go do that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was an immediate reaction. It's like, yeah, absolutely. I think that's important. And I think one of the understated things that people in our business need to be aware of is that they need to support their artists after they're done working on their music.
Absolutely.
If you're not out there tweeting about the artists that you just finished the mix for or in the mastering or producing or whatever it is, you're not doing them a service that they deserve.
Yeah, right. And I think I put this somewhere that we're not, the service that we provide is not a service. The service we provide is to make our customers happy with whatever problem they need to solve.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they're trying to do is get their music out and have it sound their best. So, you know, and like we said a minute ago, we are really happy and proud to be working with these people that, you know, have their musical babies and hand it over to us. We try to raise them in a short amount of time. That's a stupid metaphor, but you know what I mean? They give it over to us and trust us with it. And usually it's just like the really coolest stuff. And you're like, wow, I can't believe that you gave this to me to try to make it sound better. And
yeah.
And I do that as often as I can. Like, hey, as soon as somebody puts a single out that I worked on, absolutely, I'm going to, you know, shout that from the rooftops. Hey, go check this out. Not for me, but for them. Like, hey, this is the coolest and it needs a signal boost. And I'm going to boost that signal because people need to hear this.
So what have you been during it? Are you working?
I feel like this is our new topic, and
no, it is.
yeah, I'm working on some. What's that?
Oh, I'm going to change the file names and update the Trello and.
yeah.
No, we just roll with it here. So.
Yeah, I've been working on some instrumental metal music from a New York artist, and I don't know that I'm, again, allowed to say who it is, but it was a referral from somebody, and what a cool thing. Like, you wonder how people find you, and it was like, I thought it was kind of like a random connection, but it wasn't that random. It was kind of like, hey, I know this guy. Check him out. I think he's got what you need. And boy, this guy is got the coolest music. It's just like this killer instrumental metal. I don't know. It's right up there with it's like Dream Theater or something, or but without lyrics. And it's it's really neat. It's really inspiring.
Solo?
Primarily solo. He's got a drummer. But the rest of it's him. Yeah, it's really cool stuff.
Right on.
And then some other things in the works, and of course still plodding along with some of my original stuff that I keep backburnering for everybody else. But yeah, I mean, all kinds of things in the works, mixing, a little mastering, doing some free work for friends.
Yeah.
Which is always cool. Like, yeah, if you can't afford it, but we have a relationship already, because to me, this is all about relationships. You know, give me a quote I can use or a review or something, and that's good enough for some people. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I haven't spent a lot of time doing ads or targeted ads. I try to do posts. I have a new business Instagram that I'm working on, just kind of bumping up the stories and using it as a place to interact more than post, because I want to keep it clean and kind of more like a landing page style.
Yeah, how are stories working for you? Because I've seen you up in up in the top bar in stories frequently. And
yeah, I wasn't real sold on it. I mean, I don't personally like to look at them because they're so random.
Yeah.
but they, you know, I think it appeals to a certain generation and a certain type of person that, rather than looking like flipping through the feed, they want to say, oh, this person is somebody specific I'm interested in, and let's see what they have to post today. They tend to be more casual, kind of random, what's going on. So people who have like a formal feed in Instagram will tend to put their casual stuff in the stories that's not, you know, photo perfect, you know, stage and all that stuff. That's, I feel like people who liked Snapchat, that's kind of what they do. And now that's kind of bled over into, now there's stories on Facebook,
yeah,
which of course they own Instagram, but I don't know. And then now Instagram has kind of a TikTok competitor called Reels.
Yeah.
I mean, this has to be a hobby. I think there's just so much to all of these things. Like, you got to spend a lot of your day on these things to do it well.
I think the kind of one of the things is to reuse your content as much as possible in different ways.
Yeah.
I'm actually getting ready to take a longer form video that I did, and I'm going to break it up into chunks and then do a series of 1 minute videos that post one right after another. Have you seen that?
That's
before?
A great idea.
Yeah. And then I guess I use this opportunity as you're scrolling through to basically see your entire long form video in a series of 1 minute videos.
Yeah. Do you know Damien Keyes?
I don't believe I do.
He's a British musician who started a music school after being in a band, and then now he's kind of like a social media coach and business coach. Anyway, he's got a good feed, and he's got some books out, and that's one of the things. He has a book called, wow, I got to stop starting these sentences without knowing how to stick the landing. he's got a great book on social media, and it's got a 30-day challenge. And that's definitely one of the things that he recommends is making content that is purposefully repurposable. Like you just said, a video that you can break into chunks, and put it the long form on one platform, put the short forms on another platform, put stills from it on another platform, basically making your work go farther.
Yeah.
And working smarter, not harder that way.
Yeah, I mean, it's incredibly time consuming.
Yes.
And so anything that you can reuse and modify in short amounts of, you know, short bursts of time and to get out there for your content promotion is a really good strategy to help yourself, you know, get more time and be more productive with your content marketing.
Because like a lot of us are, I like to say now, chief cook and bottle washer, we're kind of doing it all, right?
Yeah. Lots of hats.
Lots of hats, too many hats. And if we had somebody to hand some of this stuff off to, we would happily do it. But maybe we either can't afford it or don't know somebody that does these things. So then we end up spending the time to learn how to do it ourselves and then do it ourselves. And that may not be the most effective way to do it, but I feel like we all do it these days.
Hey, let's take this moment to thank our content manager for Twitter, Steve Irwin.
Yeah, Steve.
So he's behind the lines. You never hear about him. We might have mentioned him once, but Steve helps us out a great deal. And so we really appreciate you, Steve.
Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah, he does a lot for helping us get our posts out on Monday nights, getting it out on Twitter, et cetera. It's good to have help.
It is. And if you don't, that's something that maybe to think about in your business development plan, whatever's, you know, to try and do it all is incredibly, it's time consuming. It becomes stressful. It wears you down quickly. It makes you start disliking what you do when it should be the thing that you're passionate and love to do. You know, when you get to those points, maybe it's okay to reach out and get some help. You could start with friends or, you know, if you don't have the budget for it, then friends or family members who can help you. Maybe they don't know how to do any of it. Maybe they'd be willing to learn if you teach them. But that type of thing where you can bring in, quote, an intern to help you out.
Right,
you
know? An intern. Yeah, well, some of this is like marketable life skills or business skills that somebody would be happy to have later on.
Sure.
That would lead to an actual job.
You know,
I want to say that one step that I've taken that I think I must have got this from the six-figure home studio somewhere, is start to do, and this is like so boring, but so necessary, do process documentation. Write down all the things that you do as if you're writing instructions for somebody else to do them. This is it's a little tedious, but it's also a little eye-opening when you start to go, okay, I'm going to write down all of these things as if I'm going to hand these instructions off to somebody else to do it. And then at some point, you will be able to and say, hey, here's the instructions for this social media thing that I don't have time for. Can you do this? And maybe you barter services, or maybe it's just somebody who has extra time and an interest in doing this and they can do you a favor. But yeah, if you do that, maybe they can put that on a resume and get a job, you know?
And that's why it's awesome to have you around, because I'm kind of like, here, do this and ask me questions when you don't know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I tried to get my kid to do that. I was going to have him, but I didn't have enough stuff for him. But I tried to teach him like HubSpot. You know, I was going to have him do, hey, I'm going to send you an email. Now take that person and put it in my HubSpot as a contact and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. So for a little while, he was doing that, but then I kind of ran out of new things for him to add. But, I mean, that's an easy thing.
Yeah.
Say, hey, you know, I have a CRM, is customer relationship management software. And that's where you keep your, you know, your contacts and your emails and your notes and stuff about the people you have business relationships with. And HubSpot has a free version, and you and I both use that, yeah?
Yeah.
And it has a great phone app, and it's web accessible. And you can add people to your team and give them access. And you can do that with Trello, too. In fact, I gave him Trello access and said, hey, here's my to-do list in Trello, and here's HubSpot. And if I send you this email and say, hey, add this person to my contacts, add this deal to my deals. I mean, yeah, that's not, you know, but you have to have the steps written. You have to have the process written. Otherwise, they have nothing to refer to, and then they come back to you and ask you a bunch of questions, and you might as well have just done it yourself.
Yeah.
You know?
And my son helped me when I was setting up my Discord. I needed to test roles and permissions.
Okay.
And I needed someone else to come in as different roles and verify what permissions they had, and then promote and demote them to different levels of, you know, different roles, and go through all that testing to make sure it was all configured correctly. And so some things you just need help doing that type of thing with, because it's difficult to, I mean, you can do it. You have two devices and you're using two different emails. One's your admin,
right,
and the other one's your user you're testing with. So you can certainly do it, but it's so much easier if you just have someone helping you.
Oh, yeah. Well, we've done that for each other. Like, hey, can you check out my site so I know what it looks like from an outsider's point of view?
Yeah.
Can you fill out this form real quick and see, we'll find out, you know, if it generates a result like it's supposed to? Because sometimes you put a web form out there and you don't know it's broken. And you're like, why am I not getting any hits on my website? And then it turns out, you know, your web form is messed up and you're not, or it's going to an email with a typo and it's bouncing. You don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, you got to field test this stuff, and it helps to have a helper.
Definitely. That just made me think of analytics for some reason, with what you just said. And I don't know that it's exactly related, so I just sort of am branching here.
Mm-hmm.
But I found out, I never expected it, that 60% of the visitors to my website are on a tablet.
What?
Seriously.
That's really interesting.
And I've actually not really tested my website on a tablet. I have on my mobile device, on my phone, and I've done it on laptops and larger screens and everything. But I realized in looking at that, I was like, I wonder what my website looks like on my tablet.
I'm kind of blown away by that. I didn't know that many people use tablets.
Yeah, I was blown away by it too. And that's important. You know, I wonder what their experience is like. I should have tested that. I don't know if it's in landscape or portrait, but my own personal, when I'm using my tablet, I'm always using it in landscape mode. So I'm assuming
it's going to
be a wide view.
Yeah, I wonder. When I think of tablets, I think of my in-laws. They're like in their 70s or whatever. So I don't really think, I think of people using their phones, and I see a lot of metrics are mobile versus computer, but I don't see a lot of metrics as tablets.
Yeah.
Doesn't WordPress let you preview a web page in multiple forms? Like it'll let you preview.
I think so.
And I don't know. I always trust that.
Yeah. And use the emulator, you know, the mobile device emulator and the Chrome browser.
Yeah, I don't know how much I trust that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, but interestingly, you know, you related that to the next older generation. The that group is 25 to 38 years old, is that segment that's using tablets that are visiting my site.
That surprises me even more.
Yeah. I was blown away by it. It's always been at the bottom of the list if it even made it. So there's like this surge of tablets. Has COVID and stay at home increased the sales of?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
Like people, people like flopping on the couch, like watching TV and.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you don't want to watch Netflix.
Or maybe they've always had the tablets, but they were just not getting used, you know, and now.
Right. Cause you can't carry them with you. You know, you throw your, you know, you got your phone, you put it in your pocket or your purse, you take it with you. If you're going to watch Netflix, you're on the Muni or the, you know, streetcar or whatever. And then, you know, you get to work and you have your computer, but maybe people aren't carrying laptops around. Maybe when they're home and they're on the couch, maybe they're using tablets and watching TV because it's a better viewing experience.
Right.
That's a really interesting thought.
So I'll definitely be testing out my website on tablet tonight.
Yeah, I will say it is important. I think all of the new stuff is, but to make sure that your website is responsive, which means that it reconfigures its parts to show it on different size screens. I think all modern web builders do that, don't you think?
Yep. Yeah. And mine is, it should be fine. I'm not terribly concerned about it. Yeah. And it responds all the way down to mobile device, and in landscape mode on a tablet should be the same as it would be pretty close as a, you know, on a laptop or a Chromebook or something like that. So
I will say sometimes the mobile experience, it does weird things with menus on websites.
Yeah, like, depending on the width. Mine is triggered by the width, and so uh-huh. it'll go to a mobile menu if it gets too narrow. And okay. you know, that little hamburger menu that you know?
Yeah.
And then it goes to a full menu when it's in, you know, wide enough in landscape.
The hamburger thing doesn't always like occur to me. Oh, that's a menu.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm getting there. Sometimes it's three dots. Like,
the other thing is,
can y'all just agree?
Is if you're listening, if you are the three Opera users visiting my site, I want you to like get hold of me. Okay. If you're
call me. Three Here's Opera my number.
Users, I'm going to give you a free master. Okay.
There was a period of time where Opera was like supposed to be the most secure. It was the only one that allowed like VPN, like
yeah.
security and SSL built in, and you know, for all of the snooping that Google does and memory problems that Firefox had for a while. You know, there was a push to jump to Opera. I tried it. I didn't like it.
Yeah. I was a devout Firefox user.
I use Firefox every day.
A decade. And then kind of transitioned over into Chrome as it became more ubiquitous.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's pretty much all Chrome. I use Safari on my phone, though. I don't like Chrome on my mobile devices.
Oh, I have ever since I switched to iPhone, I only use Safari on the phone because I just can't be bothered to install a second browser because I can't figure out why I would
want the integration and passwords, you know, that are synchronized yeah. between devices and everything. It's so worth it.
Yeah, I will say I use both Firefox and Chrome, and this is a weird thing, but I use Firefox for work stuff and for online financial things, and I use Chrome for personal stuff and personal browsing. And it's partly a security thing and partly a way to keep my worlds differentiated yeah. at a glance, but it also means I have like 40 tabs open at a time and two different browsers at any given time.
So how's that for recording and mixing vocals?
Yeah, that was the best tutorial I've ever heard on recording and mixing vocals.
Next time in episode 42, it's going to be recording and mixing vocals.
Yeah, it's funny because I was really looking forward to talking about that.
Sometimes you just got to go with...
You got to go with the flow, man.
Yeah.
You got to go with the flow. And this was a fun discussion. Hey, I didn't get to ask you. So you said you had promoted posts. Were you doing those out of Facebook or directly from Instagram?
This one was directly out of Instagram.
Okay.
For me, Facebook isn't a very strong performer. I don't know exactly why. I could run the same ad in Facebook that I run over in Instagram, and Instagram will exponentially outperform the Facebook ad. I think there's just a different demographic
I agree.
Interested over on Instagram than there is on Facebook.
Yeah, I think Instagram is more up and coming and Facebook is more going out.
Yeah.
But are you getting business from your Instagram ads? I guess a better question.
I am.
Good. Good.
I would like to see more of that type of performance look on the Google ads side, because there's a huge amount of volume of ad of activity on the ads with very little conversion.
Yeah, I got a lot of Google hits on my business page, but I don't think any of that's coming through for conversion.
Yeah.
It's weird.
I mean, you know, the numbers are, they're big, you know? You would think the odds would have it that you'd get a conversion per percentage of
right.
people interacting. But again, this is where the analytics are really important. Where are those coming from?
Yeah.
What information can you glean from those analytics to tell you about why behavior is what it is?
Mm-hmm.
It's also given me an opportunity to look at my site performance. You know, my stuff's loading in like 0.06 seconds.
And nice.
I'm really happy about that because the volume of traffic has been up there. So the website's scaling nicely for the amount of visitors that I've been getting. So performance is good.
Performance from a web loading standpoint is good.
Yeah, web performance, page loads, you know, visitor, the user experience. So I think all that's good.
Just not the bounce rate.
The bounce rate depends on where they're coming from. Facebook, again, is the worst.
Yeah, I think people across the board kind of say that ever since they changed their algorithm to a pay-for-play model.
Yeah. My best percentage the Google ads are the best percentage of low bounce. Hmm. And then Instagram's next, and then Facebook's the worst. Twitter's above Facebook.
I got to learn to love analytics. It's just not something that comes to me. And boy, I would love to sit in a room with you and just like watch you kind of go through the motions of here's how I check analytics on this site and here's what I do with that information and here's how I pivot as a result of what I'm seeing. And none of that makes any sense to me, I'll be honest with you.
Well, when you see that you're hitting, you know, you're reaching out a large amount of volume activity to 13 to 17 year olds, then,
yeah.
You know, Bling, what did I do wrong? Right. Unless I'm really interested in reaching out and I have a product or service for 13 to 17 year olds, then it's awesome.
But, well, you know what? Maybe go where the clicks are, right? Maybe come up with a product for 13 to 17 year olds. I don't know.
But those are, you know, you take that information and you work with it and you try to make decisions and change. That's why I was saying I modify my ads 3 or 4 times right. a week based on stuff I'm learning along the way. And I just use the analytics app on my phone most of the time. I don't get in too deep on it. I'm just curious about, they just released an update, which is actually really nice. The analytics app on the phone just got better. And I was actually able to discern better information out of it without having to go to my desktop computer. Hmm. Yeah, I don't know. What are things that I'm interested in where people come from because my ads are set.
Oh, to, every time you say that, I think country. What country are they coming from? That's not what you mean.
It is in this case.
Oh.
You know, so I'm UK and US and Canada and then a couple other smaller Bavarian countries that I've done business with before. And, you know, so I like to look at that and then the cities. In those countries that are, this kind of gives you an idea of, because it's people that are interested in music and production and all over the place. So from that respect, that's really cool too. And in this day, it's not just about producing music in the US. There's music all over the world. And
oh, sure.
There's no reason to be limiting if you're working online to a narrow locale, in my opinion.
Oh, no, I totally agree. The only problem is the time difference sometimes.
Yeah. And again, working remotely, it's few and far between where you need to have a real-time meeting. And
yeah.
But even then, if you have a couple of those, then it's so you got a late night or an early morning or whatever, it's no big deal.
Right.
And if you know, depending on, you can do an 8 o'clock and still hit somebody at the end of their day over in, you know, in Finland or something like that.
Right.
Usually 6 to 8 hours difference. So it'll work out.
Yeah, that's not bad. Yeah, it's the 3-hour one that gets me.
Yeah.
The East Coast, West Coast thing. For some reason, I'm always like dealing with people on the East Coast, New York, New Jersey, Florida. I don't know why. It's funny.
But anyway, I'm not really an expert at the stuff. I just try things and try to adapt and make some decisions and see how they work and try to make better decisions next time, you know? And so it's just a matter of just, keeping moving and keeping to trying new things and eventually finding something that performs well for you, you know? And when you get those, it's really nice. It's like, finally, you know?
Totally.
Because it took a lot of not performing well to get to the one that is. So...
Yeah, I feel like that's true regardless of what we're talking about.
Yeah.
The 10-year overnight success story. Well, cool. Well, this has been an interesting and informative discussion. I'm going to go check my analytics now.
Do.
All right, Doug.
Well, excellent. Everybody, thanks for listening. I hope you're still here.
I hope so, too. This was not what we intended to talk about, but hey, it was a fun discussion. Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah. All right, cheers.
Cheers. Have a great week, everybody.
See ya.
Well, that's it for another episode of the Indie Music Podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, leave us a comment or a review and share with your friends. Hit us up on our website at indiemusiccast.com. Find myself on Twitter at Mojo's Army. Find Douglas on Twitter at Rezo Studio. Thanks. Until next time, keep creating.